Iowa is a great place to grow things, crops and livestock, and there are many different ways for farmers to do their work. As farming continues to evolve, deep divisions have formed between those with different approaches to agriculture. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we conclude our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, with a conversation about how farming is changing in Iowa, the barriers to entry for beginning farmers, and the divide between different schools of thought about agriculture. I'll talk with economist Chad Hart, an organic farmer near Atlantic, a young farmer who works on a 9,000-acre farm near Garner, and two livestock farmers with very different operations. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If you want to be a farmer in Iowa today, good luck. The work is hard, profit margins are narrow, land is expensive, it's hard to come by at any price. Those challenges not only keep a lot of young people out of farming, they also make it difficult for established farmers to experiment or take risks. This hour is the final installment of Talk of Iowa in our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice. We're going to have a conversation about how farming is changing in Iowa. We'll talk about the barriers to entry for beginning farmers and the divide between different schools of thought about agriculture. During the hour, I'll talk with a variety of farmers around the state. We'd also love to hear your thoughts. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org is our email address. And my first guest today is Chad Hart, Associate Professor of Economics and Crop Market Specialist for Iowa State University. Hello, Chad.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And there have been so many changes in farming in Iowa in recent decades. We're not going to be able to talk about all of them, but let's try to break it down a little bit. And I know you've taken a look at the size of farms over time. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of how the size of farms in Iowa has changed?
Certainly. As agriculture has continued to evolve here in Iowa, we have watched our farms get larger and larger. If you go back to 1900, for example, the average size farm here in the state of Iowa was roughly 150 acres. When we look today, the latest census of agriculture indicates the farms have over doubled in size over the last 115 years to where our average size farm is now 345 acres. And when we talk about most of our, let's call it production agriculture, where we think of our corn and our soybean producers across the state, most of those farms are actually even larger than that.
Right. We'll talk to someone who works on a farm that's nearly 10,000 acres. So if you look at the array, not just the average, I mean, there are some truly enormous farms in the state of Iowa.
Definitely are. And it's the case that you find that nationwide. You know, the idea is that whether you're looking at the north, the south, the east, or the west, farms have gotten larger throughout the country.
Now, there's a little bit of push and pull when people talk about family farms in Iowa, because many of us lived through the farm crisis of the 1980s, and we know that many family farms in Iowa were lost. That doesn't mean that the farms in Iowa are not family-owned, but can you give me an idea of how many fewer farms we have today?
Well, when you're looking at farms today, and in terms of sheer numbers, I'll take you back to 1982, and that was the idea is the Census of Agriculture. The U.S. Department of Agriculture does a census on agriculture about every 5 years. And so the last one we did was in 2012, and that said we had 88,637 farms in the state of Iowa. Go back to 1982, you would have been talking about over 115,000 farms. So we have had a sizable reduction in the number of farms in the state, which goes along with, you know, those remaining farms getting larger.
Well, and when we talk about family farms, that's kind of a tricky definition as well, isn't it?
It definitely is. You know, as farms have been passed from generation to generation, you do have some farmland that remains within the family, but it's not necessarily the family farming them. But from a legal status, I guess we, you know, when you look at the data, it suggests about 85% of our farms are still what would be considered family or individually owned.
And what about the other 15%? What kind of category do they fall into?
They are broken into three major categories. There's partnerships, there's corporation farms, and then there's what they call other corporate or estate farms, or farms that are in trust situations.
Let's talk about land, because land has gotten more and more valuable over time, and we do see land prices reducing a little bit from an incredible peak just a couple of years ago. But give me an idea of how land values have changed.
Land values have gone up significantly over the past 10 years. We are seeing a downturn now over the last couple, but even now, as USDA looks at the average value of an acre of Iowa farmland, we're looking at around $8,000 an acre, which, to put that in perspective, if we were just to go back 10 years ago to 2006, we would be talking about land values in the $3,000 an acre range.
Of course, the price of an acre is just one barrier to entry. How often does land change hands in Iowa? If I had the money to go out and buy a farm, can I?
Land does not change all that often here in the state of Iowa. When we're looking at prime farmland, the idea is that about 1% to 1.5% turns over each and every year. A real active year, maybe it's 2-2.5% of the land changes hands. So that's the deal. It is a very sort of thin market in that sense, and that's, you don't have a lot of turnover.
So that's got to create a huge barrier for anybody who wants to get into farming at any level.
It can. What it says is that we have to look at unique opportunities. What you find is that land that you've always seen, maybe if you grew up in Iowa, you've always seen that section across the road, that section may not come up, but you have to be willing to take advantage of when sales do occur. Does that land fit the opportunity you're looking at?
You know, we were talking about how many kinds of farms have grown in size significantly. We've also seen in the last 15, maybe even 20 years in Iowa, a growth in a sector of smaller farms where horticultural crops are grown, CSAs, organic farming, this kind of agriculture. Are we seeing a big enough movement there to reflect a change in the size of farms?
Well, we are seeing a shift there. And when you look, what we've basically seen is sort of let's call it a shrinking of that middle-sized farm and growth on both the small and larger ends of our farm size spectrum. Those larger farms tend to concentrate on what's considered more commercial agriculture, so our traditional corn, soybean crops. Our smaller farms tend to concentrate on more specialty crop, more niche market areas that offer opportunities there.
And how small can a farm be and still be a going concern when we talk about those specialty crops, that niche market?
Well, when you look at the ag data that the USDA gathers, a farm can be as small as 1 acre. The idea is they look for any opportunity that can create over $1,000 worth of agricultural production is considered a farm.
We were talking about people getting into farming. Do we still see most people who get into farming in Iowa coming from farming families?
I believe, yes, that we still do. The idea is that, one, having that experience, having grown up on a farm, definitely leads itself to easier entry into the agricultural careers. But we do see others that are coming from varied backgrounds entering agricultural as well. Those tend to be the ones that are entering on those smaller farms and in those newer markets.
Let's talk about technology a little bit, because technology has changed so dramatically in farming on a lot of different levels. Seed technology, when we talk about commercial farming, but many different other kinds of technology as well. How has that transformed?
It's definitely transformed, and I would say that's one of the biggest drivers that has created our growth on farm size, is because the technology that's being brought to bear to create agricultural production has allowed us to replace capital with labor. We do have improved seed technology. We have improved machinery. We have precision agriculture, which helps us apply our inputs much more precisely to create the crops and the livestock that we grow.
Now, we were talking about the price of land a little bit earlier, but let's talk about the price of equipment. So if you're farming a couple of thousand acres and you are trying to take advantage of this precision technology, what kind of prices are we talking about for a state-of-the-art combine, for example?
Well, that's the deal. You would be talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars for some of this equipment. And so that's one of the fascinating things to go and tour at the Iowa State Fair, is to go look at the ag machinery, just see the size and think about the cost of each of those machines.
And are farmers able to buy their own machines? Do you see farmers investing in co-ops so they can share machines like that? Is that another big barrier for people?
Well, you do see all sorts of ownership arrangements. Some do own the machinery outright. Others will do some co-op sharing. Some others will just lease the machinery to conduct their farming business.
So we see this growth in large commercial farms. We're seeing a growth in smaller specialty crop farms, horticultural crops, organic, et cetera. Do you see a divide developing that's deepening between these two different kinds of agriculture?
Well, I don't know if I would call it a divide that's deepening, but I would say it's just looking at agriculture and saying there are several ways to approach this as a career. Each have their own advantages and disadvantages, but it's a matter of finding the market opportunity that fits the style of work that you want to do. And that's what we're seeing agriculture evolve to. There's our production of what are considered bulk commodities that are the ones that we've traditionally done, but we're also getting into more, let's call it customer-focused specialty markets that address more directly to the consumer, especially as we look at the food markets.
Have you seen a shift in what students are interested in?
I definitely have. I mean, the idea is that when I started up here 20-some years ago, the vast concentration of students was on, let's call it the commercial ag, the corn, soybean, traditional side. Now I get a fair mix within the students. The idea is that they want to be within agriculture, but they're looking at both the commercial and the smaller scale specialty aspects of it and trying to figure out which way they want to go as they look forward to creating their career in agriculture.
Do you get a sense of frustration among students who may say, I really want to farm, but I just don't know how I can make that happen?
I would say that hasn't really changed since I've come up here, because the idea is getting in agriculture has always been sort of difficult. The idea is any time you've looked at this over the period of history that we're talking about here, there have been barriers to entry into this type of industry, just like there are in any other business opportunity.
Now, I'm going to ask you to be fortune teller for just a moment and look into the future. What sector do you see growing at the most rapid pace?
The idea is that I think we'll continue to see this sort of growth on both ends. That we're looking at the larger farms will continue to evolve and grow and probably get larger. We'll also see a strong contingency of small farms growing throughout the state, especially as I look at the development of our farmers markets and our local foods movements. That will create that, if you will, that marketplace for those smaller farms to continue to thrive and grow, while at the same time we need the feedstuffs and foodstuffs, fuel stuffs being created by our larger commercial farms.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Chad Hart, Associate Professor of Economics and Crop Market Specialist for Iowa State University. In just a moment, we're going to bring some farmers into the conversation. I'll talk with Austin Wood. He's a young farmer who works on a very large farm near Garner, Iowa. I'll also talk with Denise O'Brien, who's the owner and operator of Rolling Acres Farm near Atlantic. That's an organic operation. And we'd also love to hear from you this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our final Talk of Iowa installment in our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice. All this month, we've been having conversations about some of the topics that divide Iowans, some things that maybe we're not that comfortable talking about sometimes. And this hour, we're talking about different kinds of agriculture, as agriculture is evolving in the state of Iowa. With me right now is Chad Hart. He's Associate Professor of Economics and Crop Market Specialist for Iowa State University. And throughout the rest of the hour, we're going to be talking to farmers on different kinds of operations in different parts of the state. We'd also love to hear from you, your thoughts, the challenges that you've encountered with farming. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me right now is Austin Wood. He is a younger farmer. He works at Dandyland Farms near Garner, Iowa, which is a very large operation, nearly 10,000 acres. Hello, Austin.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And tell me a little bit about the operation that you work on, Dandyland Farms, and your involvement. This is a family farm, but you're not the owner of this farm at this point, right?
Correct. I went to college at Iowa State and came back to work with my father, who started the operation. He came up in the 80s, and when farmers, you know, were going through the farm crisis, they were, you know, highly leveraged. He was just coming up, so the opportunities were there, and he definitely took advantage of them. And since then, he has grown it to what it is now, a very efficient, fine-tuned operation. We mostly grow corn and soybeans.
And again, this is an enormous operation. So your dad really hit the market at just the right time as far as growing the land. Does it continue to grow?
I would say right now we've hit a plateau. We're fine and comfortable with where we are now.
And Austin, what are your hopes? I mean, you work on the farm. Do you want to have your own operation?
I do. I actually have about 700 acres that I manage myself. So I do see more of the smaller aspects of farming as well as working, you know, for my dad on the large operation.
Working on this very large and profitable operation, do you still see, we were talking a lot about the barriers to entry for young farmers. Do you still see a lot of challenges for you if you want to strike out on your own?
I do. You know, you mistakes are magnified when you're smaller. You just can't absorb anything, any mistake, because, you know, you're borrowing basically all your money to start out with from, you know, credit services. And it's near impossible to be a marketing genius. And that's what you have to be in this kind of climate right now.
When you think about striking out on your own, what kind of farm do you envision?
Well, I envision more of the same of what I've been working on, you know, just basically corn and soybeans, trying to fine-tune things, make things more efficient, create a system that I can work with partners that, you know, that they're going to reward me for that system, give me better prices so I can be more competitive and buy the technology that allows me to be more efficient, use less fertilizer, use less seeds, utilize my time better, all of those things.
About how many people work at Dandyland Farms now? How big an operation is it staff-wise?
We have one man who has worked on the farm for 25 years, Todd Ruby Altman. And we just hired about 5-6 years ago, my friend Ryan. And so we just have two of those guys and both my parents, my mother and my father.
So that goes back to what Chad was saying about how technology's made it possible to grow so much more with fewer and fewer people. But this is still an enormous operation. What's it like? What's your workload like, especially during the growing season?
Well, you know, the major season is harvest, and we get seasonal workers to help us out. We have about 14 guys, you know, at maximum during that time. And, you know, we don't really have a huge chunk of time off in the other seasons because we're always working on equipment. We're scouting fields. We're getting everything lined up so everything's, you know, ready to roll when it's go time. And if something breaks down, if you don't have something planned, if you forgot something, those mistakes are magnified.
Given the operation that you've grown up with and have been working on, do you think it would be possible to go back to a time where we had these smaller farms, if you think about, you know, 80, 100 acres?
Absolutely. I think you can. But you can't do it with the commercial type of corn we're growing right now. You have to find a niche. You have to find something where you can get a premium on your crop. If you were to go back to 150 acres and farm with a 40-20, I mean, still all that costs money. And the profit margins are so slim now, you're going to have to go into town and get another job. And is it worth it, you know, to do that? Spend time away from your family, you know, when they could be helping you on the farm.
Do you have other brothers and sisters?
I do. I have one sister.
Is she also involved in the operation?
She is. She is living in Des Moines. She's doesn't have the opportunity to be here physically, but certainly a lot of moral support when she comes back and any free time she has.
Is this something you always knew you wanted to do?
No, actually. I went to school for art and design. So definitely a huge change. You know, I came to the realization after spending some time in college that this is what I want to do. This is, you know, coming back, working for my dad. It's a blessing to be able to, you know, work in the earth God gave us and make, you know, make a family and support them.
Austin, stay with us. I want to bring another farmer into the conversation now as well. Austin Wood is a young farmer. He works at Dandyland Farms near Garner, Iowa, which is an almost 10,000-acre operation. Denise O'Brien is on the other end of that spectrum. She is the owner and operator of Rolling Acres Farm near Atlantic. This is an organic operation. Hello, Denise.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And give me an idea of a little thumbnail sketch of your operation.
So my operation is about 3 acres, and it's organically certified by the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. I have one high tunnel that's a 72 by 30, and it's movable. It's on a track. And I have a low tunnel that's called a caterpillar tunnel, and I have a greenhouse. So those out of that the reason for the tunnels is for season extension, so I can be growing food. Actually, last year I sold kale and spinach in January, so it's the possibility in Iowa during the cold weather to be able to market products, fresh produce.
Your CSA takes up about 3 acres. How many people are involved in farming that land?
Right. Well, if you want to put it at full-time equivalents, I'd say 3, but most of our workers are part-time. They help me weed and harvest, and my husband's does work off the farm, and but he's the machine guy, so he fixes machinery, and I prefer not to use the machinery. I will. Yesterday, I tilled and mowed for my fall crops, so I'd say 2 full-time equivalents, but we have about 5 part-time.
So that really illustrates the point that we were talking about earlier about how much more labor-intensive these kinds of horticultural crops are.
Absolutely, yes.
How did you get into farming?
Well, in my case, I married a farmer. I grew up in Atlantic and left, never thought I'd live in Iowa, and came back to Iowa in 1975. Met my husband and have been here ever since. We just celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary.
And starting out in farming, you were on a very different kind of operation, right?
Well, we did. Although when I met Larry Harris, he said he wanted to be an organic farmer, and that was in 1975. So he was way ahead of his time. And we started out learning about organic farming and have you know, had successes and failures over the years, but we feel very good about where we've been all these years, given what the how organic is such a good market for farmers now.
You were really on the forefront of organic in Iowa. You've been farming organically for 20 years. Was that a real challenge to be one of the pioneers?
Oh, yes. I mean, and it's 40 years we've been, yes.
Oh, okay, sorry.
We've been under a microscope for a long time, but we've felt that we needed to take care of the land in a good stewardship way, and that was without using chemicals and with making the soil richer, leaving better what we received as in the beginning of our farming career.
You do a lot of work with beginning farmers, and this is an area of farming that we've talked about earlier in the hour is growing. There are more and more people who want to get into it, but they're not people who have family farms.
Yes.
So what do you think the biggest barriers are for the people who come to you and say, I want to learn to do this kind of farming. I want to start my own farm.
Yes, well, it's very interesting. And most you'll find young people and actually career-changing people. They're not all beginning farmers are young. Coming out to learn about farming because they haven't come from a farm, of course, and they don't have land to go back to. So learning the cycle of farming and, you know, the seasonal aspect of farming, learning those things that people, that young people who grow up on farms just have that cycle, that it's a part of their whole system, is very difficult, I think, to learn. But people are naturally drawn to it. And then the other part is the access to land. There's real issues in trying to find a smaller, maybe 40 acres and less, with a house and the availability of production.
And finding a house is difficult because a lot of those old farmhouses have been torn down with the consolidation of farms, right?
Absolutely. Where they used to dot the countryside, they've become a liability. People bulldoze them and put crops in, yes.
Do you find that some of the young farmers or beginning farmers that come to you and want to learn this kind of work, it sounds romantic, it sounds so beautiful, and it's incredibly hard work, and you're not going to get rich doing it. Do you find some people come to you, spend a little time, and get disillusioned?
Oh, yes, that's a possibility. But what I see with the transition of people through here is many of them go into other parts of the food network, of the food system, of the agriculture system, and they could go into marketing. They could go in, you know, into working for a nonprofit that promotes this. They can take government jobs in becoming an organic certifier, or, you know, working with the Agriculture Research Service, those kind of things. So most of them who may get disillusioned with farming continue to work in the agricultural system.
And, of course, that system is one that's being built all the time because we just didn't have that infrastructure in place.
Right, right. And the infrastructure that was in place when Iowa was a major fruit and vegetable production state in prior to the 1940s has been dismantled. And so now it's a rebuilding an infrastructure that we once had.
I want to get to the phones. Hans is on the line in Eldridge. Hi, Hans.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I had a question about the statistics of, you know, family-owned farms versus corporate partnerships. It was like 85-15 split, roughly, he said. And so our farm is a family farm in eastern Iowa. We are incorporated just for, you know, to keep the family separate from liability that the farm might encounter. And I was curious if that number, or if a farm like under the auspices of a corporate farm, or if that would still be considered a family farm.
Okay, that's a great question. Chad?
In this case, the way USDA defines that would still be defined as a family farm. When they're talking about a corporation here, it is not what we'd call the family style corporation that we do see a lot of set up here in Iowa. It's truly a corporate structure to the farming that's what's counted for USDA statistics.
All right. And Hans, you had another comment as well, right?
Yeah, I've been enjoying the conversation from both of the examples that you have on, and I guess the notion that there's a divide between farmers in the state is, at least for me personally, I don't see it as a divide, but more of a necessary diversity. And you know, the woman that has the small organic farm and the guy that works on the large farm, I just think that, you know, it's two different ways of, those things are almost two separate businesses, such that it would be hard to consider them even under the same type of business. And I have a cousin that farms up in Charles City and has a similar operation to the woman that was speaking last, and she just has gotten certified as organic in the past couple of years. And I think I really enjoy the fact that there's farms like that, and there's farms like mine where I'm, you know, larger, more established. And I think it just makes it more interesting.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. And we're nearly out of time for this segment, and I'd love to get your take quickly, Denise. Farmers may get along well with each other, but there is kind of a political divide when it comes to farm subsidies and what kind of security there is for organic farmers or specialty farmers. I mean, Do you see a divide?
Well, I think there's friction in different places. And one of the places actually that is even more so than the subsidies, because people are very proud not to have subsidies, I think, on the one hand, although there's not much money for research for organics and for small farming. But I think the tension lies in drift, in pesticide chemical drift. And a farm that's certified organic loses their economic viability for 3 years. If their crops are contaminated by pesticides and herbicides. So I think that's where attention does lie, but it seems like the Pesticide Action Network is working with the Iowa legislature to have more, to make that more visible and to lobby for more money for the Department of Ag to be able to take care of that that issue. But that certainly is a tension, yes.
Denise, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Denise O'Brien is the owner and operator of Rolling Acres Farms near Atlantic. Austin, thank you.
Thank you, Charity. It was a pleasure.
Austin Wood is a farmer who works at Dandeland Farms near Garner, Iowa, a much larger operation near 10,000 acres. Also with me this hour is Chad Hart, Associate Professor of Economics and Crop Market Specialist at Iowa State University. And we'd love to hear your thoughts this hour about the evolution of farming in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our final Talk of Iowa installment in our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice. We're talking about how farming is changing in Iowa. We've been talking about the barriers to entry for beginning farmers and the divide between different schools of thought about agriculture. With me is Chad Hart, Associate Professor of Economics and Crop Market Specialist for Iowa State University. We're going to bring a couple more farmers into the conversation as well in just a moment, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we introduce our next farmer, Chad, I want to return to a point we were just talking about before the break, and that is sort of a political divide about different kinds of farming. The farm bill primarily covers commercial agriculture and the more conventional kind of agriculture that we've been doing in the state of Iowa for a very long time. I mean, this is a pretty controversial subject at this point, isn't it?
It can be. I mean, I think it came down to, and as you listen to Denise talk about it, it was not that they're necessarily arguing about the subsidies as, you know, subsidies alone. It's more about how is the government supporting agriculture, which sectors are being supported and which ones are being not supported or supported very little. And we are seeing a shift in how the farm bill does distribute funds. As you say, it has been much more concentrated on what's called program crops, corn, soybeans, wheat. But we are starting to see monies directed towards farmers market, fruit and vegetable production, research that way, marketing for those crops as well. And so, if you will, yeah, just like farming is evolving, farm bill policy is evolving as well.
Do you think it's evolving at the same pace?
No, it tends to lag behind. The idea is that our agricultural policy does tend to lag behind what's happening within agriculture, and it's a slower process, if you will, to move the government than it is to move agriculture.
Now, of course, we don't just grow crops in Iowa. We also grow livestock, and I want to turn to a couple of farmers with very different kinds of livestock operations. Doug Darrow is here. He's owner and operator of Rapid Creek Ranch near Oxford, Iowa, raising grass-fed beef and free-range chickens. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Cherry. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back.
And give us a thumbnail sketch of your operation. What do you do?
Well, we operate 160 acres of pasture. We manage it under a holistic or non-commercial, what you'd consider a non-typical pasture. We mob graze our cows, meaning we are on a very small piece of ground for a very short time with a long duration of rest, followed by our chicken, and then followed by our laying hens, and then we also have a broiler program that we use to target weak spots in the soil with a high amount of nutrients from their waste. So And then we direct market everything off the farm.
And this is a change from the kind of agriculture you were doing. You had a more conventional livestock operation. And we were talking earlier about how it's hard for farmers to experiment, to take risks, because the profit margins are so narrow and the risks are so high. But what made you take that leap?
Well, we started out with 280 acres here, and we were doing everything by the book. We consulted with all of our providers for fertilizer and seed chemicals, and we were growing as much corn as everybody else, but it boiled down to economy of scale. We couldn't rent any more ground because there's older, more established farms in our area. It was hard to compete for ground, and what we found out, the harder we worked, the farther behind we got. And then we had always been grazing cattle since we got to the farm, but we really started to dive into the idea of what can we do to be more sustainable and get away from borrowed money and a lot of inputs. So after our work with the managed intensive grazing, the next logical step was to go to the mob grazing. And then after that, I started to find people out in the United States that were doing this kind of work, like Joel Soliton from Virginia. And Joel's philosophy is if you like my idea, use it. So we did, and it seems to be working really well for us. Our inputs are down, our production is up. But the only way I could see us doing that was we had to lighten our debt load. So we had a young renter that was renting on 120 acres, and we offered it to him for sale, and he bought it. So now we're debt free. And
was it terrifying to make this switch?
It was to start with, but the encouragement that we get from our customer base is amazing, and that's what's kept us going and really drives us to keep taking care of the land. And trying to get people to come to the farm and see what we're doing. And we have people in and out of here all the time, and everybody's receiving it extremely well. So those fears are starting to slide away, but agriculture is a gamble. I don't care how good or what you're doing, but it's all a gamble. So.
And we were talking earlier about how technology has made it easier to grow more food with less input. It sounds like this is quite a bit of work. Did you find that the workload increased a lot with a change?
Yeah, to a certain point, but what are you going to do with your time? I mean, you know, whether you sit in a combine for 2 weeks solid and push yourself, your machinery and yourself to the limit. And then after that, you kind of back down to managing what you've harvested. Or I'm in the pasture every day, kind of relaxing, watch the chickens, moving cows, looking at the ground, seeing the changes that are happening on the farm. I don't know. Work is just work, I guess. I don't know how to explain that part of it. So.
Did the change make the work more meaningful to you?
Well, that and much more enjoyable. The stress levels have gone way down, especially with the low or no input type of farming that we're looking at, trying to match our operation more to what nature's letting us do instead of trying to force a square peg into a round hole. We've done things in our operation like moved our calving from February, March to late April, early May and June, which puts the grass more in play when the cows need it more to make milk for the calf, instead of supplementing hay early and then, you know, and at that point, the cow's already gone past her peak in production on milk. So now we're trying to line things up to what nature would do, I guess.
And it's paying off financially as well.
Yes. Yes. It's still a little bit of a slog, but it's, you know, as the markets develop, we're beginning to look into now, instead of individual animal sales, we're starting to look at maybe, along with our individual animal sales, but also there's grass-fed beef in the United States is starting to really gain some momentum. So maybe we're hoping to find some markets where we can ship 4, 5, 10 head of fat grass-fed cattle ready to go to market. So
I'm talking with Doug Darrow. He's the owner and operator of Rapid Creek Ranch, raising grass-fed beef and free-range chickens and eggs as well near Oxford, Iowa. I want to turn to another farmer now. Kurt Frazee's with us. He's a beginning farmer in Mills County in southwest Iowa, and he's trying to grow his cattle operation. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here, and tell us a little bit about your operation.
Actually, I'm a beginning farmer, like you said. This is the first year I have ground rented for myself and my family. As far as our overall farming operation, I also farm with my dad. I'm the fifth generation on our family farm. 2015, we received our Century Farm designation, so we're really proud of that. And, you know, I hit the ground, and I've been a farm kid ever since.
Do you think you would have gone into farming if you didn't have family connections?
I look back at my family tree, and as far as I can go back on both sides of the family, my grandparents have all been involved in agriculture.
So it wasn't even a question for you?
No, I think it was a genetic predisposition to be a farmer.
So in farming with your dad and then trying to start your own operation, how did you find the land that you're working with?
I basically, land rental around our area is very highly competitive, you know, just like it is everywhere in the state. Everybody's trying to find more acres to supplement their operation. And I got to the point where we have our operation very well established, and we have the machinery capacity to expand a little more. So I was able to work for 2 or 3 years with some neighbors, and I was finally able, when the past tenant was ready to retire, I was able to work and get the ground rented.
Tell me about your cattle operation.
In 2009, we actually put up a hoop building, which is one of the versions of the new modern beef facilities. We took out all of our open dirt lots, and now we feed all of our cattle under roof. And the main reason we did that, we looked at some studies through Iowa State, and they were showing efficiency increases in the cattle feeding aspect of it. But we also looked at the environmental impact of it, where being under roof, we use corn stalks for bedding in our building. We were able to eliminate any danger of runoff, you know, versus an open feedlot. The only water that can escape from our building is the water that hits the roof and runs off the eaves. Everything else is contained inside.
Have you also increased the number of cattle that you can raise with the new technology?
Going to our building, we were able to put more cattle in the same footprint, just the way the buildings are designed, versus an open lot where the cattle, you know, in the spring and the fall, you hit the rainy seasons, when the cattle don't have to fight the mud or the snow or anything else like that, where they're on the fresh corn stalk bedding all the time, you're able to increase your cattle density versus an open feedlot.
Do you find that being able to grow more cattle more efficiently, do you find that that's paying off?
It's paid off. Our efficiency's gone up, and with our operation, it's a way to diversify, so we don't solely rely on feeding cattle, and we don't solely rely on corn or soybeans. It's just one of those tools to spread the risk.
We're running out of time, but I want to ask you, you've gone in a very different direction from Doug. Do you feel like there's a divide in Iowa when it comes to growing livestock between people who are pursuing pasture land and grass-fed beef and people who are building the hoop houses?
You know, actually, I think I know people that are whole organic operations to grass-fed to commercial feedlots. I think at this point there's a demand for everybody, and that's the unique thing about Iowa is there is a niche for anything you want to do. There's no right or wrong answer. If there's a demand for it, it will be profitable for you.
I want to get to the phones before we're out of time. Suzanne is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, yeah. I guess I wanted to, just given what's been going on in the conversation, I'll stop talking about some of the things I was going to talk about, but there's a difficulty in transitioning. We've talked about the livestock aspect, but in terms of crop production, going to no-till systems or and how that overlays with organics, and I guess it's just difficult to change your cultivation techniques in this environment where the profit margin is so low. And I know there are government grants out there, but it's very complex and it takes a long time to describe. But the grants really don't serve a lot of times people who are on that edge of experimentation and trying to do something differently and do right by the earth. So I find a kind of a void there. We have gotten one grant. We do the mob grazing also, but just to jumpstart that. But I think in terms of the cover crops and the nuance of tillage methods, that's really a hole right now. The research has been all in the GPS production agriculture and hasn't been as much for instance, how do you interseed cover crops earlier into your crop production so that you have a wider variety of cover crops rather than just rye or oats that won't winter kill or, you know, that can get established. But that kind of technology is not being researched by our land-grant universities as much. There's only one, Michigan, that's done a little bit of research on that kind of technology. So,
well, Suzanne, thank you so much for bringing that up. And, Chad, I'd love for you to respond to that. I know that's not specifically in your field, but, again, this sounds like the divide is not between farmers. The divide is about policy and about research. Can you share your thoughts on that?
Certainly. And I would say, again, that's something that's continuing to evolve here. As the caller mentioned, the idea is that, you know, when you look at the academic research, there hasn't been as much on cover crop development, on the different varieties of cover crops, how to interseed them. But I would say that's an area that is looking to grow over the next several years. I'm seeing more emphasis on that as we go through time, as we look at even state policy. I look at the nutrient reduction plan that's been put forward by the state of Iowa, and it does promote active research efforts in looking at cover crops. How do we look at different tillage practices, and how do we spread that knowledge across the land?
Well, Chad Hart, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's my pleasure.
Chad Hart, Associate Professor of Economics and Crop Market Specialist for Iowa State University. Doug Darrow, thank you.
Thanks, Charity.
Doug Darrow, owner and operator of Rapid Creek Ranch near Oxford, Iowa. And Kurt Frazee, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity. It's been a pleasure.
Kurt Frazee, a beginning farmer in Mills County in southwest Iowa with a growing cattle operation. And Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. I want to take a quick moment here to say thank you and goodbye to one of our summer interns, Lauren Knutson. Thank you for your work, Lauren, and best of luck in the future. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.